back to the heating and the congregation. Let's try and see what kinds of things do you think are, you know, reasonably, but I mean, so it wouldn't take 40 years to set it up, that could happen in congregations that are heating. Some of them you mentioned already, but let's see if we can put some stuff together. I wrote down about 15 just sitting, you know, at one set. That is, so there are, I think they're pretty obvious. But I'd like to get some up. What are things that congregation, by that now, again, people in congregations, leaders of congregations, groups in congregations, I don't care, whatever. Mm-hmm. What can be done that is that could be considered heated? Go ahead.
For a teaser, on a Saturday afternoon, sponsor a health fair.
Good.
For a teaser?
Well, a teaser, just say, okay, here it is. Yeah. Why don't we try this? Oh,
okay.
Support groups.
Pardon?
Support groups.
Support groups.
Yeah.
Let's get as many up as we can and then talk about each one a little more, too. Okay?
Sanctuary.
Retreat.
Sanctuary. What was yours, Alana?
Retreat.
Retreat.
Food or clothing bags.
Mm-hmm.
And now, are we talking about what congregations can do to heal within themselves or to heal
the world?
The whole, okay, everything.
All. Which the whole just, heating stuff that we're talking about,
yeah.
the congregation is a heating community.
I also love recycling services.
Sure.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Recycling resources, glass, paper, things like that. collection,
yeah.
those things.
Gathering
yeah.
stuff.
Good neighbor program.
Sure.
And the visiting programs we just talked about.
Well, not
sure. Let's, don't forget telephoning.
Ecumenical
therapy.
Maybe.
That's good. That's
and study
that.
Groups.
Yeah.
Education.
I'm sorry, I missed one over here.
Ecumenical services.
Oh, yeah. And what was the last one then?
Study or support groups.
Okay, we got support groups here. You want
oh,
study groups?
Oh,
study
group?
Would be a good
I didn't
say yeah.
that.
All right.
Education.
Pardon?
Education.
That's pretty good.
Counseling. Counseling.
Preaching that's risk taking. Preaching
that's
that risk taking. Not
yeah.
just
uh-huh.
preaching because that's what the congregation will let you say.
Imports honesty and also
yeah.
emphasizing the gospel of grace.
There's a good
love.
Word for that. What's it called?
You mean prophetic preaching?
Prophetic preaching, yeah, that's what I want. Thanks.
Hey, how about what would you call sharing the building with other groups of people,
yeah.
including other religions.
Community service, something like
yeah.
that. Or you mean or any. Well, just say share facilities.
Yeah.
And what eating together.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Friendship, that thing you're talking about, the you know, bond, small bonds, group bonds, intimacy.
Parenting program.
I'm sorry, parenting?
Parenting.
Oh, parenting, yes.
Or coupling, or any kinds of those.
Coupling.
Well, I need that too. Yeah.
This is
demonstration. Yeah.
Okay.
Single fourth leg
crisis center.
Pardon?
Crisis.
Yeah.
Yep.
Put singles up there too. Singles program.
Singles.
Yeah, lay ministries. I guess.
Lay leadership.
No, let's
yeah.
let's lay it out too. Let's
block parties.
Block
party.
You mean like outreach into the neighborhood that
yeah.
the church is located in?
Feeding them and.
Yeah.
Inviting them in.
Block parties. Yeah, great.
What? Well, ecumenical and sharing to with your facilities, other people, but whatever. Okay.
What kind of grant work?
Pardon?
Grant money.
Oh, getting grant money.
No.
Oh.
Giving it.
Oh, giving grants to people.
Giving grants to people, whether it be some kind of neighborhood medical or something.
Sometimes institutions like the church can get grants in behalf of other things where the people themselves couldn't get it. They could get the media.
Let's include that together then.
Yeah, cool.
Do they think it's important to have a building remodeling project going on or something?
Heal the building.
Yeah.
New buildings.
Condominiums.
New parking lot.
Yeah.
Or something
of youth work up there.
I agree.
Okay. I think also something that has to do with the arts, but I'm not sure how to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Choir exchange.
Or not only choir, but to expand it to visual arts and
the healing environment. That includes a heck of a lot of the arts, huh?
Politics.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
Advocacies.
Or developing.
Stuff like what
I think
Greg was talking about. Going in and sitting in and writing sit-ins in the Congress.
Yeah, Greg, could you repeat what you said?
Yes.
Remember when we opened up our little town for open housing, about 8 of us took the town of about 10,000 people and opened it up. They fought, we probably had 400 or whatever it is. There were 8 of us.
Whoa.
And we went and sat in the council meeting and had one of the lawyers who were part of us to write the draft for the kind of thing, and they passed it. Took them about 3 months, something like that.
Uh-huh.
But 8 people.
What was it about?
So that you could have blacks and that you would work against the realtors who were seeing to it that any blacks who came to town didn't get to see any decent anything else at all. And again, 8 people did it. There was a good mixture, the only Jew in town, and a couple of us, a couple of Roman Catholics. Yeah. And there was amazing how the people thought that you represented just gobs of people. We maybe did, but we didn't know that.
Eight folks.
So it happened.
Sponsoring refugees.
Oh yeah.
Then what about how would you say something to do with? I don't know what kind of a ministry it would be, but I'm thinking of the unemployed.
Yep.
I don't know what kind of an outreach it should be, but anyway.
Neither does the Lutheran Church in Pennsylvania.
Also, the shelter and the retired.
Yeah.
Sure.
What was that?
Children on one hand and retired on the other.
Children, street kids.
Children.
I'm
thinking
of the retired.
Some kind of activism within their conference, writing resolutions.
Denominational conference.
Okay. Yeah.
That's.
But that's healing if you can actually go there and feel like you have some kind of power.
You can't.
Oh no, you can go.
Prison work. Always come to mind.
Handicap.
Sure.
Women's group. Carpool.
Women's.
Voter registration
group.
Ah, voter registration. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, something like worship, renewal, or liberty.
Yeah.
Renewal group.
Inclusive language too.
Inclusive language.
In their group. Including blacks and women and handicapped, all of that includes kind of
healing service.
Not yet.
Yeah.
Looks like we got the congregation.
Looks like people are gonna have to do more tithe than this congregation.
tithe, or you can give your tithe.
Others.
Cleanup projects.
Some kind of international focus or exchange or
culture.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yes, like even a sister congregation too.
Mm. Yeah. A brother.
A brother congregation.
Sibling.
There's a congregation.
Oh, cleaning up.
Environment. How about in this in the summer offering tools and lawnmowers and things to be circulated throughout the community so people want to buy them?
Sure.
Which are getting expensive.
Yeah.
He's lending a rake.
Retired or the elderly. It's just you can see the elderly too.
Garden projects.
Garden projects, yeah.
Sure. All right, garden.
Community gardens. Some kind of program for the kids in the summer.
Okay.
Not just Bibles.
Yeah.
Bible summer program that kids frees up parents and allows them to do.
I'm trying to think what things the church can offer that outside the church would not be offering. And I don't mean that it's not a church duty. But of all the things we have up there, probably all those things are being done by some other people outside the church, except for possibly...
It could be done by somebody outside.
Yeah, right. I'm trying to think. Do we have anything that the church can offer uniquely that others cannot or would not be likely to do? I'm trying to see if we have any of that or there.
Teaching theology.
Teaching would be one thing we have.
Oh, but I see lots of them there that in the public from a perspective of a Christian person, like a parenting program or a good neighbor program from the perspective of a person in the church or retreats or sanctuary.
In other words, it isn't so much doing a special thing, but doing everything from a different perspective.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you could go to a counseling center and not be able to deal with your faith.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where if you went to a counseling center here or something, you could deal with it in terms of a faith perspective.
Yeah, I fully agree. Yeah. I'm just trying to think if there's also anything that the church offers that's almost a unique, I guess a healing service would probably be.
You got that, didn't we?
Yeah, it's up there.
But I think theology is differentiates it for me.
Yeah, okay.
So education.
Yep. I think you got all that. I have hospice support, but that's part
hospice.
Of it.
Yeah. Yep.
The participation in the hospice thing.
Do you know, Omar, if that's for anybody to volunteer in hospice, or is it just for families who are having a member dying?
I don't know. Hospice care, as I understand it, is an effort to enable both the person who's dying and the family, the important ones, whether it's family or a loved one or whatever, to have that opportunity to do that outside of a medical setting, and that they provide usually free care. That means a nurse and or a friend. You know, you can have somebody come in. You want to get away, they'll come in and take care. And help train the family and spend a lot of time with the family with dealing with the death. It's usually terminal. At least at the three hospices. I've been on the board of one, and I was helped by another, and I have a dear friend who runs a third in Chicago. Yeah.
Do we have a Bible study up there? Like, I'm thinking of Crossways, kind of how important that was to me.
Sure.
We had study
booths,
but not
Do you have a structure group up there, or would that be under support group?
I put it in that, but you could pull it down, sure.
I'm thinking,
variety of support groups, like single parenting, for instance, that whole thing. In addition to the parenting group, another one that just deals with the toughness of a single parent, for instance.
Or the divorcee.
It's divorce, exactly. That's in Chicago, very big. There isn't a thing up here that I haven't seen in a parish. Maybe most of you the same way. I don't mean any one parish, but the divorce groups in Chicago, the Roman Catholic Diocese, I think, has something like 80 around the city of gathering of divorced people and working with them. And that's no small healing, kind of thing, especially in the Roman Church, where, you know, you've been told quite clearly you just messed up a sacrament.
Yeah.
You know,
What do you have? We put worshiping as a...
That's the one I have on here.
It isn't up here. Just gathering for worship, for some people, is a healing.
A healing experience?
Well, yes, and sure they should be.
I think you were referring to that too.
We could say Eucharist also.
I would.
But that would be part of it.
Has the church taken on any issues besides availing themselves to the use of their building with AA or with alcoholics?
Sure.
Yeah,
a lot of churches do. Mm-hmm. Confirmation could be
bigger
than it is.
What I did with, for what it's worth, when I don't care, I told this group about that, when my last two kids, I didn't have any part in any training of them in confirmation, for Tom and Mary, I just took them, asked them to knock off a day of school, and I lined up people all over the city of Chicago for them to talk to. One was a black woman in the south side of Chicago who arranged busloads of women to work domestically in Lake Forest, all the places you saw. She's on the south side. She arranged the busloads to go up and all that kind of business. We sat in her office. And a Jewish lawyer downtown, for Tom, a jazz pianist on the other side. For Mary, a gay woman. For a television producer, public television producer. And they just went in and talked to that people, like, what do you think about God or whatever? And then I just said, just get acquainted with these people. And that cross-section. And then in between, when we drove through it, then we talked about what the heck was happening. And I think that was as much of a confirmation, instructions kind of thing than anything that they got anywhere else. And what I learned from it, from the kind of questions that the kids ask. And then we ended up standing in the railroad station just watching people. And just saying, what do you think of that person? What do you think? Just observing human beings as they were going by. And then went and sat in the restaurant and talked about it. But that kind of stuff. And one of the congregations I'm going to talk about has called the plunge. For the confirmation is called the plunge. And their confirmation stuff is done at a circus. You go down and meet the clowns and the people that run the circus and sit around and do that. It's then in a jail scene or whatever it is, they just go out and do that. Yeah.
I was thinking, I was thinking of mission work too. You don't have anything up there. And I think of Lutheran Volunteer Corps and mission work like Carolyn did, and mission work in terms of people who serve on the soup lines or emergency shelters or something, not just
volunteer service for that kind of thing.
Right.
Okay. How about visiting other, like you said, the plunge, other congregations is included in that, all different walks and...
I guess another thing that would come like under study groups, that could be anything. I was thinking of peace groups.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's put it specifically.
Well, it doesn't seem to be difficult to put together, you know, stuff and things for congregations to be about. What we were implying before us is the need, I mean, the will to do it, whatever that means, and especially the kind of loving community that makes this stuff happen beyond being, you know, a project, but that it's a really expression of a congregation that believes there is healing, and that they have been given the power of healing, and the power to enable people to heal themselves as well as, you know, let that happen on the outside. Let me just tell you about a few congregations that I know of that do some stuff like this, and what I've been looking for is what are some of the common denominators that makes it happen, and other people that do too, like St. Martin's and others. I was going to save, and I forgot. This is Cross Lutheran Church in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And you read, this is their monthly stuff. and you read through, you'll find about 20 of these things in this just one book. Black Parish, north side of Chicago. I mean, north side of Milwaukee. And there's stuff about their services and their worship stuff and all, and the stuff that they're studying, the Latin study groups and all that. Jim Cohn, black theologian, is speaking nearby. They've got a group going to that. The whole section on the trial of sanctuary workers, being what do you call them, the concern of this parish about they have to be a sanctuary as well. Pledge of Resistance group in Milwaukee meets on the 26th. They're getting together to attend that. Teacher to teacher, 3.5 week discovery tour of USSR. And they're trying to get somebody to go to that to be able to bring back that. Martin Luther King special anniversary celebration in the congregation. Kinship, friendship with boys 7 to 17. Their congregation finds people to relate to boys 7 to 17 in their congregation. Educational seminar for El Salvador, that they're, some of their congregation is participating, a whole section on youth. They have a youth choir that travels all over the country. I'm trying to get them to come to Holden in 87. About 30 or 40 people. They have midwinter retreat. The choir sings at the elderly and the rest of that. They support the Luther Manor Senior Citizen Center Share Food Project. Well, every time I read this doggone thing, I get excited about a congregation. You know, there aren't gobs of them, but they're there, and it's happening, mm-hmm. And every time I read about them, there's something new going on at the place. It's just, and it's not a gob, and it's not a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Oh, 150 at the most that are really. And it's one of those huge churches, you know, that used to be whatever, seats probably 600-700 people, and there's about 100 and some left.
I was just thinking about, I've gotten very frustration at what I see as the inactivity at the parish I grew up in, mm-hmm. Sioux Falls. But thinking back, especially growing up in South Dakota, where race relations between whites and Native Americans are mm-hmm. so tense, particularly in the 70s, I remember our church was probably the one place where I learned about their culture, and it was the one bridge that I felt that I had.
And that's something, because most churches right next door don't do anything.
Yeah, and I was just thinking about it. It was really, whether it was films or having people coming from Rosebud or wherever, and just having that kind of access and interaction, that was really powerful in terms of shaping attitudes and whatever when I was growing up. I mean, that was...
Another church I know about, others of you do too, is Luther Place in Washington, D.C., which has such a marvelous program for women, for street people, for abandoned and abused children. They just have building after building that they have set up to do that and raise funds in order to support that kind of a ministry. So, and there's people sleeping, you know, the church is right here, and this next room right down is where all the street people sleep, all during the night before, and they leave around 7 or 8 in the morning, whatever it is, and the whole church is there. The witness of those people into the congregation, I think, I don't see how anybody can be there and not be, caught up in it.
So the doors are open always?
Oh, yeah. There's certain times when you come in for whatever, depending on what it is, because they have to have somebody there all the time with them.
Right.
But overnight, every night. Mm. And then these other buildings nearby, purchased buildings that they have, and there's a staff that's there for the women, a staff for the children, whatever.
A few of the LVC places are right there,
that's
too.
Correct.
One of them is in the Luther
that's
Place
correct.
Basement.
That's correct.
Take off mats and archives every night.
I met with that person, and my daughter Mary did some of that.
Denise, Snyder,
right.
Started LVC out of her work at Luther Place Church. I have a pamphlet along, a few people have looked at it, that gives a history somewhat of the church coming into all of that,
mm-hmm.
The services there, if anyone would be interested.
And Agnes here,
yeah.
Brother, was instrumental in some of that. Agus Johnson. Somehow connected. Another suburban church, Lutheran, I mean, the community Christ's Servant in Lombard, Illinois, doesn't own a building, purposely rents, and almost all of their money then goes for projects, other than paying a salary for their pastor and secretary, all of it goes for stuff in the community. And their rented facility is the office space for about 8 or 9 different community agencies that they're all committed to. The congregation decides, and it wasn't some board of trustees, whom they're going to rent out to. It might be voter registration, it might be in a very rich, it's this DuPage County, very, very rich county that has still a lot of poor people in it that most people don't know about. And all the ecumenical stuff that they do in there too. Again, a very strong suburban parish. And now it's getting settled in. It's about 15 years old. It's less of what it was. And that sometimes happened too. That's what's remarkable about Luther Place, is that it's still going like this rather than settling in from my observation.
It seems a common denominator among all these healing types of congregational ministry is active people, first off, people committed to this and willing to commit time. But I know the experience in my church that I attend, they have a lot of good ideas, but no dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say roughly at least half of these require funds.
Mm-hmm.
And a personal question addressed to you is, why are some ministers able to stimulate larger giving than others? For instance, in the church that I'm at, the pastor we had before was able to raise a much higher percentage budget than the present pastor. I mean, at least 30% more money. And the people in that congregation are not 30% poor. If anything, they're wealthier. And we would be able to do a lot more social ministry and give grants to people who are doing these kind of things. But people aren't given the money. What's your observations on that?
That's a toughie. I think there is something about gifts. You know, some people are good preachers, some good teachers, some people are good friendly people, and some people I think have a gift, knack for evoking some kind of gifts out of people. But I just think that the more you lay before people, well, if the style you have includes concerns for people who aren't being helped, then it seems to me you're just lifting it up all the time. Like having those people from the street right there in that parish that they can see and touch and taste, you know, almost, is part of the ministry and evoking the gift.
One of the things I find different between the previous pastor and the one we do now is that the previous pastor continually said that not only do we need to meet our church budget, but we need to meet the benevolence and more.
Sure.
And that was the criticism of the church is that it's always asking for money. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people have that criticism. But he just was real upfront about it, said that, we got to make our budget and the money's here, so are we going to do it or not? And it was amazing. Now they've got this thing called 90-10 Sunday. It's kind of a gimmick where people give 90% of that week's salary to the church rather than 10% and all this. But it was kind of a... I don't always agree with all these gimmicks and all that, but what I do think happens is that people tend to have more attention where their money is being spent. And so if they're giving $3,000 a year to the church, I would think they'd be more inclined to be involved more in the church.
I think a lot of the ministries that we lift up here too, and you said at least half, and I certainly haven't looked, are ones that just don't cost a cent. telephone right. ministry, well, I mean, maybe somebody's bringing out some extra dough, but most places, as soon as she got on the Seattle line, it didn't even cost them extra
right.
you know, for that part of it. There are lots, and I think in a setting where people are worried about money business, I think it's a darn good thing to bounce out with stuff that doesn't cost us extra.
And another aspect, the congregation that I was in, maybe they had trouble increasing a general offering for benevolence, but if the congregation had the idea and became involved and wanted to deal with one of these projects that cost money, like they supported a refugee, then the giving comes just for that specific project.
Right.
And I think that's often.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, what it does is they have decided they want to do that. That often then becomes a way that they give where it's much harder to just say give more to the church.
I was reading the book one by John Hall, The Church of Future, and what you were saying, you know, he's advocating liquidate all these assets. Mm-hmm. What can we give up as a church? You know, why are we having to always get more? I mean, I don't personally want to give my money for robes to the church. Mm-hmm. That's already colorful enough. Mm-hmm. You know, and it has. I think my money could be better spent giving somebody who has nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is one of my problems, as always has been, I think a lot of people from my age bracket, is the church has so much, you know? It seems like they do. They have buildings, they have properties. And I guess, why can't we, you know, start slimming down instead of always increasing, you know, with these building projects and whatever, you know? I think it's hypocritical. And easily it just makes me not want to participate, or it's an excuse for me not to participate in it. And I think Hall was saying he has a Church of Future and asking a legitimate question on that.
That brings to mind what you just said, and when you mentioned remodeling earlier and people laughed about the paving of the parking lot. I look at this carpet all the time and it reminds me of my church at home. A church burned down Thursday, January 9th, 1975. I'll never forget it. And we got a new church going. I mean, that was the immediate consensus. Yeah, we want to build a new church, build the brick church. And in the meantime, we met in the high school auditorium. And so,
right.
you know, the building committee and all that jazz on what type of church, and, you know, all those issues right from the start. Then when it came to the remodeling, and the ALCW women having saved so much money for carpeting the church. And I still remember Jim Womeldorf says, what he brought it up at a meeting one time with obvious frustration. Why do we get so hung up on what kind or what color of carpeting we're going to get? Why don't we sit on bare concrete floors, on wooden boxes, on folding chairs that we have left? I don't care, he said. Why all this? And that really struck something in me and has stuck with me all these years. And just, you know, put the money elsewhere.
And
I know congregation in Chicago, a Good Samaritan Lutheran Church on the South Side, left the Missouri Synod Church, started off on its own, doing quite well, just, you know, not size, 100 people, something like that. They don't have a building. They're meeting in a Methodist church. Methodist church is a darn big. They have a chapel big enough to take care of each Lutherans on Sunday for all of their services. But the battle inside of that congregation yet of whether they really ought to have their own building is so intense.
Right.
It's not, it's a small group, but an intense group you're just really not a congregation if you don't have your own building, is the thought.
Right.
But how marvelous that they are not eating up funds on this other kind of junk. As far as, you know, every time I've been with them and encouraged them, I did a lot of preaching for them during vacancies and all that kind of jazz. I really worked on that part, that they were heroic in standing up against the stuff in the society. So a couple of you had.
I just wanted to say, elaborate on a question I had that John brought up, in that I read the Catholic Bishop's pastoral letter on the economy,
mm-hmm.
and it's a sense of, I felt a sense of hypocrisy in, mm-hmm. in a lot of that, in that I agree with a lot of what they're saying. But take, for instance, Chicago area. The Diocese of Chicago is the largest Catholic diocese, or one of the largest in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And they own
large chunks of downtown real estate. And
the suburb.
They're not about to give that up. And I can understand, you know, they need that kind of investment potential for the stability of the institution. The same with the American Lutheran Church or Lutheran Church in America. But then to have a pastoral letter that says to people, it's not right to accumulate wealth. I mean, that's the biggest University of Notre Dame, which is heavily supported by Chicago area, is one of the most well-endowed schools in the United States. And I don't even know how they could put out a letter like that without first addressing themselves. But
I've not read that in detail. I've only read over it, but I had the same kind of feeling, and I was hoping that somewhere in there it would be said that, first of all, we have to say this to ourselves. I don't know if we just say that, but it seems to be essential.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, the way they do their starting a congregation or something like that is they, that property they have, that's what they mortgage, and then they get the money. Like the little congregation in Madison that started out with nothing was $1.25 million in debt. They got $1.25 million from the archdiocese to build the school and all this stuff. Now it's almost 2,000 members, paid all that stuff up and all that stuff. So they work the capital system for that particular thing. But, you know, it's the line. When do you stop that? When do you do? When do you get rid of it or what? And it can't be avoided, is what I'm saying.
I also wonder...
It can't be avoided in what sense?
It, to deal with that, right. The conflict between making a statement like that and then having all of this investment stuff in the area. I don't think you can walk away from that conflict.
No.
I'm not pretending I got an answer to it.
Why establish a public document before they've dealt with that?
Maybe it was, if they felt that's the way to call the church to do that. That's what I was saying. In there, I would hope that it said, this is addressed as much to the church as it is to anybody else.
I was going to say, too, that that also includes my life and simplifying my styles, too, and not being wasteful. So I'm not putting all on church, but... If I am doing actively taking my life seriously and simplifying things and really working on those issues, I'm not going to feel inclined to give to make their life more, make the church more luxurious, you know. So I've really got to... Good.
When Lisa spoke about the battles over the carpet of the church, and I think one of the problems in quite a few congregations, and it was in ours, is that these people who are spending this time fighting about the carpet and so on are probably among the 20% that are giving 90% of the support to the church.
Yeah.
And so it's very hard for one to fight that, and for a pastor too, or the church council and so on, because they are the givers.
That's
and yet they have that kind of feeling about the church and so on. Another caution I'm reminded of is the different forms of healing and our different ways of approaching it.
Right.
One of the women in our congregation that I would get most upset with, because year after year, she was very conservative in her opinions and the way it was and so on. Year after year, she would leave the fight to try to get the daycare center out of our church, which I thought was one of the best things that they did. But these facilities, why, some Sunday mornings you walked in and there was a urine smell in the hall when you were going to use it for Sunday school, and you know, just, and I would get so frustrated and so on. But what I'm getting at is, at the time when the sensitivity she had when I left this community with plans for Mary Shaffy, and she wrote me and was willing and able to share a divorce that she had gone through when she was young, and the guilt she had experienced and so on, and what that meant. I mean, if you knew her, you would really understand what that had meant for her to have had to face the fact that she was being a divorce. But all I'm trying to say is how healing it was to me. And so you can't say she isn't a healing person or concerned about healing, even though, you know, to me, that's a very non-true aspect, her fight about the daycare center. So I guess it's just a reminder that we all have different ways.
They're all incongruous, yeah.
The community thing is so important, to share everyone's gifts and talents.
If you aren't, be sure to include St. Martin, too. I know what you're going to say now, but I wanted you to talk about St. Martin.
What I was going to say now is that even in any kind of counseling or any kind of emotional health, you have to take care of yourself, too. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes people see the carpeting and see the building as one of the ways that they, that is their home, and then from there, they do their ministry. And a lot of times it's over exaggerated, but if you aren't having something that where you view yourself as taking care of yourself too, and if you always view yourself as caretaking everybody else, that's really unhealthy. And the people who just rent the space and then loan it out to other people, that's just as much home for them. But if the congregation already owns the church, then it's easy for me to also see.
Yeah.
I really see and hear that other argument, so to speak, for the materialistic in ways. More recently it was the organ, new organ issue at our church. But when it came to things like the carpet and or robes, people say, what's wrong with having some nice things? And when the church burned down, speaking of the place and the home, you know there are elderly women who've seen me grow up, and they've been confirmed and baptized and confirmed and married in the church and had a spouse buried, and that's their church home. And to see that loss, that is a very significant thing.
Some neat variations there. I mean, another church that burned down in Chicago, the pastor's going to be on staff this summer. When they rebuilt it so it could be a multiple functioning building and could be used by a whole raft of other people, you know, in the community. And that was, you know, then they felt it was, they're doing something to themselves, and it's attractive. But that very room can be adjusted so they can be used for 17 other things for the community to do it. And there was sort of a marriage of a concern for building something of their own that they had, but they designed into it. It's a usability for the whole group of people around it.
When Jane mentioned the arts, I thought of that too in our church, and we took things like that, the railing, the altar, all types of things can be moved, and
sure.
Things, whether it's a choir or a liturgical dance thing, or just the whole variety of settings that can be used. And,
I was offered a very neat job or to be part of a project. It was some kind of a Lutheran project that was countryside in Brooklyn, part of New York. And the job was that four of us were going to live in an apartment, a very simple apartment, get some money just to for the living and food and so on. And our job would be to go out to the people on the street, the black people and the Spanish people, and every mixed culture, and to ask them if there was some kind of interest to build a community, to build the community would be a church. And from there on, maybe rent an apartment somewhere, or in some way have a place to get together. But it wasn't, instead of, the neat thing was to, that we would go to the people first, and then see if we could get a building, instead of saying, okay, we're building this church,
Who offered the job?
Charles Montgomery.
But I mean, who was sponsoring? Was it another church, or was it a...
sounds very familiar, like...
I think AOC, I'm not sure.
Or it's maybe some denomination.
Had money for 50...
Oh, yes, okay. Now I know what you're talking about.
I think in the Lutheran Standard a few issues ago, I saw an article about that, and it struck my attention because I recognized the gal I knew from Lutheran in the picture who's doing that.
Yeah,
that's
right. One of the things that I thought was neat just before I came out here was a project with was a Catholic church, Ascension, and but they're sharing their building, their facility, with the Jewish community. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was super neat, that, you know, because they worship on different days.
Sure.
Why have some, you know, that sure. comes together, brings us together with our people we need to be together with, so we're always dividing mm-hmm. ourselves. And I guess it's an sure. experimental project, and it's happening in, I think, two other places across the nation, but well, that was neat.
Yeah, I know a number of Roman Catholic Lutheran congregations who are sharing, who were long-term, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, not just for a year.
No, this is for a permanent fight yeah. thing.
This Community of Christ Servant, short-term, rented the synagogue on Sunday near them when they were Whoa. In between stuff.
Yeah.
And they worshiped in the synagogue. I preached there one Sunday. And that's good too. Again, just being in that building in a whole different kind of a context is a good reminder of, you know, the continuity, or at least you sort of got to deal
right.
with it, whether you're positive or negative. I thought it was excellent.
Right.
Why don't you share about St. Martin's so we can get that in?
Oh, okay, well, it's not a church for most people because it is an ecumenical group, and most of the people belong to a church where they can do some activism within the church. But it is, to me, my idea of what a church is, even though I belong to a Lutheran church. And I look at that up there and I think, yeah, that would be something that we would brainstorm and the kinds of things mm-hmm. we want to deal with, maybe St. Martin. But we're talking about visiting and healing and the pastors and things. And I remember we made commitments to one another, written 6-month commitment, put it in the book. People knew how we felt about our relationships to each other and what was expected. And nothing was said that you have to do this. Everybody's commitment was what they wanted to do. So there's no ground rules at all. You just committed whatever you want. So I remember I skipped a Sunday night meeting, which was our Eucharist and potluck dinner and our study time and worship time. All of that is in the Sunday evening. And I got 4 phone calls between that night and the next morning. We hadn't been meeting that long. And I didn't really know people that well, but I thought, you know, if that would have been, if we'd have had a pastor for that congregation, it would have been assumed that the pastor would have done that, and these people probably wouldn't have called me. And I thought that was kind of neat in terms of just people mm-hmm. feeling their own kind of responsibility in my ministry without being delegated that responsibility. I thought that was really neat. But the neat thing about that is that people try to move to the neighborhood so that you're close enough so that you're not driving a 30-minute. Obviously, mm-hmm. in the country, you can't help that, but a lot of people had picked different churches that are, you know, that they really wanted to be involved in that were a drive, and they moved their self to a location that's close to this so that it isn't a hassle to get to, and it is a part of their commitment. And I think that's kind of like what neighborhood churches are. That's why you get people who can do that kind of thing, and but they're not driving everywhere to do that.
Was that commitment brought to the community, or was it inspired there, or both, or what? It seems like that's sort of the basics of the 20% being 100% and how that makes everything on that board work. But how does it happen?
Yeah, I don't know. A lot of holding people. mm-hmm. Probably 90% holding people experience.
At least to begin with. Wasn't it?
Just to begin with, yeah. Mm-hmm. Not so much now. Probably about 50% holding people now.
I read a lot of the people who make up St. Martin's Table community,
uh-huh.
using a loose term, probably most of them belong to some other congregation.
Yeah, right, that's what you said.
Right, yeah, the majority of people. But for some people who feel that it's not, that the institutional church isn't very rewarding and mm-hmm. don't want to give their money and this and that and support the projects of the community of St. Martin, then that is their only worshiping community. And then they deal with the community, and their kind of commitments that they write to the community are commitments that you would give to your church. So it's a real combination of different things. And I guess I can't remember why I wanted to. I got highs right now, so my mind is somewhere else.
Okay.
I'm reaching. So what I wanted to say before, I can't remember. But it is an example of
doing this kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And of a church community, because I keep thinking the institutional church is so hard to do that because it's so big and you have so many things and you have so many things to worry about. Mm-hmm. And even, I mean, we're kind of big now, and we've made a commitment that if we get to a certain point, we'll split up mm-hmm. and have 2 communities rather than try to try to manage something that's really big and not be able to be family and not be able to know one another intimately and care about each other and that kind of thing.
Is this correct, just in response to Kevin's question, that it was actually the idea and was started and grew from a number of Holden people when they went to Minneapolis? That was when it did start, isn't that correct? Just to answer his question,
I thought he meant how did it ever get inspired in terms of how, what changed in people's hearts.
Or maybe he did.
But
I thought he meant how did it come about.
I'm curious about both.
Yeah, well,
is that right?
Yeah.
It did start after, I mean, it was purposely conceived by a number of people.
It was conceived up here at Holden and people saying, you know, everyone always talked about wanting to be part of community and wanting to have a church that does this and that. No one ever does anything about it. So then a few people, Tom, Whit, and John and Mary Stram, and I don't know, lots of other people you probably know if I said their names, got together and they just happened to think of Minneapolis. And just happened to show up in Minneapolis, not happened, but arranged to show up in Minneapolis, and the word was put out that if you're interested in this kind of thing, come to this meeting at this night, and then we'll talk about it. And so then that's how I got started. People came and said, yeah, we're really interested. And our first project was the table, St. Martin's table, and that was sort of Mary Schramm's dream. But the neat thing about being in a congregation, and I consider it a congregation that small, is that if I have a dream, like one of my dream was to work at the emergency shelter and to feed people on Saturday nights and, you know, have us get to know street people and whatever. So that developed the Saturday and Sunday nights, you know, all kinds of things. So, you know, I had an opportunity to have a dream and have my whole congregation hear that dream. And same with a sanctuary dream that they're working on for a year and studying. And it's a place where you can struggle and it's a place where you feel loved. And to me, that's community.
Yeah, sounds like
community. And church.
What was talked about in the book of Acts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the first church.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about the commitment, 6 months and stuff like that. It reminded me of this other one, Community of Christ the Servant. That too had a problem by when it got too big. It was so successful in attracting people that all of a sudden it was beyond really where they could do the stuff they wanted to do.
Yeah.
But their membership is only for a year. You sign, everybody goes up there, all of them signs, and that's good for 1 year. And at the next year at that date, there are no members in this congregation. Everybody is out. And you have to sign up again and talk about threats to the people and the pastor and everybody else, you know, about that, but he didn't particularly, but that potential. All of a sudden, on one side, you have no members in this congregation.
Yeah.
And only those who are going to choose to come up and sign again are members. So they really work at the commitment bit.
Yeah.
You've got to at least go, it might be perfunctory, you might go up and do it. Uh-huh. Right. But there are people who don't sign up again and decide to go elsewhere. Or whatever. But the ones who are there then at least have stuck their neck out enough.
Yeah.
In front of the people, walk up, and the kids, everybody. I mean, everybody goes up and signs.